Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Whole Life Expo. Today we've got a wonderful expert for you. She's Elaine Gottschall. About 40 years ago, Elaine and her husband were living in New Jersey with their beautiful four-year-old daughter. But she was a child who was not thriving. And then she began to experience schizophrenic-like seizures at night and was eventually diagnosed with ulcerative colitis. She and her husband were told it was incurable, debilitating, and the diagnosis carried with it a prognosis that only colon removal would solve. The next 3 years, Elaine and her husband searched the globe for answers. And remember, that was an era long before the advent of the internet. Fate intervened, and the distraught couple found themselves face to face with a 92-year-old physician in New York. And his first question concerned the child's diet. The good doctor put her daughter on the specific carbohydrate diet with the result that the seizure ceased, never to return, and the child began to thrive. Today, at 47, Elaine's daughter is the mother of two children of her own. Now, even today, patients with colitis and other digestive diseases are told that food is not a factor in their problem. Out of this experience, Elaine, formerly a Leave It to Beaver type mother, started university as a freshman at age 47 to learn the language and the facts of medical science. She needed to know why and how a simple diet could cure an incurable disease, and why, out of 15 specialists, was their 92-year-old physician the only man with the answer. Elaine spent 12 years in departments of nutrition, biochemistry, genetics, molecular and cell biology, and developed a working hypothesis to explain why the diet works. 7 years of private consultation and methodical follow-up on her clients proved the efficacy of the specific carbohydrate diet, and Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis, diverticulitis, irritable bowel, chronic diarrhea, and celiac disease. Elaine is also the author of a book, Breaking the Vicious Cycle, Intestinal Health Through Diet, which now has sales topping 2 million to date. In fact, following her appearance on the Dini Petty show here in Toronto, the viewer response accounted for the sale of over 23,000 copies of a book in 10 days, and that book can now be read in at least 5 languages. You're in for an interesting hour and 15 minutes. So bring your hands together and join me in welcoming Elaine Gottschall.
Pat has given you a pretty good introduction. In fact, it's going to save me some time, and we'll have more time for questions. There always are questions. But the first question is, why would so many of you come to hear a lecture on inflammatory bowel disease, celiac? After all, they're very esoteric disease. Joke. Very esoteric. And you know how I found them out, that it was an esoteric and rare disease? When I finished my manuscript for my first book, Food and the Gut Reaction, in 1986, my husband suggested that we submit it to publishers. And we submitted the book to at least 20 publishers, health food publishers or regular publishers, and I waited. And I waited and I waited, and all I got was rejections. And finally, I got up enough nerve to write to one of them and say, why would you reject a book that is so scientifically based and written for the physician as well as the layman? Why would you? Well, Mrs. Gottschall, before we print a book, we want to know if there are enough people out there who have an interest in this. And we don't believe that there are enough people out there who would be interested in bowel disease. Well, I've got news for you publishers. In North America alone, there are 10 million people, and we are not even the continent with the greatest number. Scandinavia, UK, I think, beats us in incidence. These 10 million people, and probably more, are suffering silently, helplessly, hopelessly. Silently, because it is not customary to discuss bowel disease in good company. You can go to a cocktail party or someplace and somebody's there, maybe Mr. Cheney, who's running for vice president, will show you the scars of his last heart surgery, and everybody gathers around and is amused. Nobody who has had surgery on the bowel can do that. So they keep quiet, and if they've had surgery, there's even more reason to keep quiet because many of them have an appliance on them. They suffer helplessly because every single one of these people undoubtedly has asked the physician upon diagnosis, what can I do to help myself? What shall I eat? And what was the answer back in the 1960s when my little girl was stricken and I went to 15 different doctors, the same catechism. This diet has nothing to do with digestive problems. I mean, even someone with half a brain would know that it has to. There's an intimate relationship between the food, the bacteria, the gut mucosa, and they are suffering hopelessly because they are told that it's incurable and that the only thing open for them will be a life of meds, prednisone, salazopyrene, acecal, and others, and that if they do not keep the symptoms under control, then there's always surgery. Well, my experience, and this lecture will be mostly a sharing, my experience with this disease, ulcerative colitis, was quite different than what the medical establishment is telling us. In the 1960s, my husband, older daughter of 10 years old, and our younger daughter, who had turned 4 and a half, were living in New Jersey, and as the speaker said to you before, I was a real Leave It to Beaver mother. I was sure that the second child was going to be easier to raise than the first. The first had colic for many, many months. I think she didn't sleep through the night till she was 16. And I thought, with all this experience, surely the second one's going to be easier. Well, she was quite a challenge. I was breastfeeding her, and even during periods of breastfeeding, this child had long periods of diarrhea and constipation. And all through her infancy, I didn't have one free breath worrying about this little girl. Of course, she went to the doctor, and they told me K-O-peptate, which didn't work. They told me scraped apple, which didn't work. And we were just besides ourselves, but that was only the beginning. When she turned to be about 2 years old, we'd be out riding in the car, looking forward to a picnic or something, and she'd have spontaneous nosebleeds, in fact, hemorrhages from her nose. Again to the doctors, and they didn't have the slightest idea what was causing them. So we'd often have to go to emergency at a nearby hospital, or if it happened during the night, I would try to pack it. But it was very bothersome. And still during this time, constipation and diarrhea. Not much pain. Well, when she was 4 years old, we have something else to add to this list. And the reason I'm telling you all this is because one of the quotes, well, it's there. I do believe that digestion is the great secret of life because it affects every other system in the body, the thyroid gland, the pancreas, the heart. You wouldn't believe the testimonial letters that I've received where people were diagnosed with all these things, endometriosis, and eventually found out that it was the bowel that was causing it. Well, this new thing that happened to Jude was the fact that one night after we put her to bed, my husband and I heard an earth-curdling scream coming from her bedroom. And we rushed upstairs to find this beautiful little girl sitting up in her bed, perspiration dripping from her face, and screaming, "You're killing me, you're killing me." Her eyes were wide open. She was in a trance. She was in a trance. She did not see us. I could see, she didn't recognize us. And I tried to use smelling salts to bring her to. We went down and got her dog up from the basement, thinking she loved this dog so much it would bring her to. It didn't. And from then on, until the next episode, we couldn't go out. We were petrified. It happened 4 times a week, and it usually happened within 1 hour after she fell asleep. If we put her to sleep at 9, it would happen before 10. If we put her to sleep at 8, it would happen before 9. We were told that we were going to have to live with this. I suspect if psychiatry at that time was quite as popular as it is now, we would have been sent for a diagnosis, and God knows what they would have said. So we lived with these things until the last straw broke the camel's back, so to speak. She awakened one night at 2 o'clock in the morning with a terrible pain and ran into the bathroom and sat there all night long. I was waiting on the edge of my seat, on the edge of the bathtub, begging her to come back to bed. "Oh, no, Mommy, I can't." And when I finally did get her back to bed in the wee early morning hours, I went to flush the toilet, and it was filled with blood. My uncle was an internist in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and I called him the next day from the doctor's office and told him what had happened. And he said, "Look, you're in New York, in New Jersey, right across the river from New York City. We have some of the finest specialists in the world in New York City." And he gave me the names of the 3 leading gastroenterologists, one in New York, Cornell Medical Center, pediatric gastroenterologist. And after the second visit there, he diagnosed her as having incurable ulcerative colitis, put her on prednisone. We called it cortisone in those days. And I was so naive in those days. I had no biological training. I hadn't even gone to university. And after a few days, she started, the vomiting stopped because she was vomiting as well. The diarrhea was letting up, and she was eating, which to a mother is the most important thing. She was eating ravenously. Well, little did I know that that's one of the side effects, so to speak, of prednisone or cortisone. And we went on with that until he tapered her off of it. And 3 months later, it returned. And this time, the prednisone did not work. And he told us she was going to be ready for surgery. My uncle, in Pittsburgh, was on the phone with me every day. And he said, "Get on a plane and come down to Pittsburgh, and I want to take a look at her." He was an internist who specialized in gastroenterology. And when I told him that the physician had not tried any other drug before advising surgery, he was adamant. He was furious. He said, "We have some good drugs. Sure, they don't cure, but he could have tried something else." And he did, while we were at his home in Pittsburgh. And for the next almost 3 years, we struggled to keep her in school because the drug was helping this much. And she'd come home with accidents in her pants and that kind of thing. And in the meantime, we are looking for doctors all over the place. We went to Lay Clinic. It was the same catechism again. Food has nothing to do with it, and it's incurable. We went to 12 specialists throughout New York City. Food has nothing to do with it. It's incurable. And just when I was barely hanging on by the skin of my teeth, because I dared not show much emotion in front of her, because one day I was crying, and she said, "Mommy, you're crying because I'm going to die." So I knew that I could not show emotion in front of her, and I was just about hanging on by my teeth because I just couldn't go on any longer, when either the act of God, Luke, whatever you want to call it, a friend told me about a friend's children who were born with celiac. They were twins, and in those days, celiac wasn't even treated by this stupid gluten-free diet. But at any rate, he was the one, Sidney Valentine Haas, was the doctor who saved her life, her children's lives. So we went to him, and he was 92 years old with his hair, gray hair pulled back with a bobby pin. And he sat me down, and he said, "Mrs. Gottschall," after he examined her and took blood tests to be sent away, he said, "Mrs. Gottschall, what are you feeding this child? No one ever had asked me that question. Well, Dr. Haas, I'm trying to get a glass of milk in her. I'm trying to get a little food, but she throws it up, and her appetite is very bad. She was much undersized by this time. She was 8, by the way. And he said, we're going to change all that, Mrs. Gotchel. And without even writing it down, he told me about the specific carbohydrate diet that he had developed. He gave me a few recipes for desserts that other mothers had given him, and home we went. There were 3 provisions on that diet, which were quite different, but one especially, which I'll tell you about in a minute. The first one was fairly easy. It said no fluid milk, but if you make your own yogurt and ferment it for 24 hours, and in those days you could buy non-homogenized milk, and I had to go to the dairy to get it. You can't anymore, so we have to just go with the times and hope that the homogenization, which is supposed to have some effects, is not affecting these people adversely. So we do get homogenized milk now, and we ferment it, the people who are on the diet. Well, that was not hard because she was allowed to have cured cheese. She was going to get her protein and her calcium from good old-fashioned cheddar, Havarti, Colby, all the cheeses that we consider good aged cheeses. Not mozzarella, interesting. And there was another one I can't remember right now.
Feta. Feta cheese.
Well, feta was the third, but there was another one in there. Mozzarella, I can't remember it. But anyhow, she was allowed every other cheese, even blue cheese. So that wasn't going to be terribly hard. The second thing was that she could not have any refined sugar. Well, we've heard that here, haven't we? But surprisingly enough, and you've been told otherwise, some of you, she could have honey. And he explained to me that the honey was a pre-digested sugar, and people with bowel disease generally did not have the proper digestive enzymes any longer as a result of all the inflammation, and that if you gave them something like sucrose, they would not digest it, they would not absorb it, and it would involve itself with the very bacteria which were contributing to the disease. In other words, if you don't break the links, which is digestion, between the various sugars in starch and in sucrose, there's nothing in your small intestine to break those links because you are sick. Then what he's not able to digest will do him harm by virtue of the fact that you are only providing food and sugar, especially for anaerobic bacteria, that will increase the symptoms and lead you down the garden path. Well, that was okay, too, because it wasn't hard to use honey. But the third one almost knocked me for a loop. She cannot have any grains, rice, barley, nothing in that grain category. And we thanked him. I felt confident with him, but I went home and thought, how can I feed my child? What do you do at a birthday party? This is impossible. But I fortunately had an Austrian friend who always had lovely parties, and she always had an Austrian nut torte where all she used in the torte was ground up nuts. So I called her quickly, and it was so simple to do. You could do it in the blender in 3 minutes. And I ground my own pecans in those days because, believe it or not, pecans were cheaper than almonds. And I made the most marvelous muffins from that. Now, I really think I should win a Nobel Prize for inventing those muffins. But I haven't heard from anybody yet. We put her on the diet, and within 10 days, the night seizures went, never to return. At the end of 3 months, all the intestinal symptoms had gone. She was eating beautifully and all such good food. What was left? She couldn't have potatoes and grain, but she could have every other vegetable. She could have squash and string beans and tomatoes and lettuce. She could get her calcium and her protein from dairy because she was eating the fermented product. There was nothing she was lacking. In fact, even without a background in nutrition, I thought, this is really a nutritious diet. Well, as most of the people who have my book and have tried it know, that it is not all smooth sailing. And at 3 months, when all the symptoms were gone, I realized, and I was beginning to think this is the end of it. Dr. Haas was still alive, and she had a relapse. She had a cold and got a relapse. And, of course, Dr. Haas was still alive, and he told me just to give her salt water enemas twice a day and to continue on the diet. And sure enough, it took 2 months, but the symptoms went away, and from then on, it was uphill all the way. By the time she was a year after she was on the diet, Dr. Haas died. And, of course, I was on my own at that point because none of the other physicians had ever heard of him. And I want to tell you, if you have my book, the latest chapter that I ever wrote is the history of celiac disease, and you will see references there from the New York Times claiming him as being the most fantastic pediatric specialist who had ever lived in his obituary column. And still, when I pick up a book on celiac written in 1998 or 99, there is not one reference to his textbook in that book, in their books. It is as though they just wanted him to go away and not be heard of again. Well, I was a little angry and very grateful, and I had two questions that were just pressing on my mind. Why was he the only doctor of 15 who would recommend diet? And what could there possibly be about so simple a diet that would cure a, quote, incurable disease? So I had been taking courses at night school, and I decided I was going to register as a full-time student, having graduated high school in 1939 with only 2 years of math. I thought there's only one place for me to go, and that would be into nutrition. And I did. I went into the nutrition department and spent 2 years there. I did very well. It was a very good orientation, but I quickly realized that the answers I was looking for could not be found in the nutrition department. They would have to be found in genetics and endocrinology and pathology and biochemistry, and away we go, even botany. All those things have an input in why this diet works. Anthropology, very important.